Hello and welcome to The Pioneers, brought to you in partnership with Rolex and its Perpetual Planet Initiative. This is a brand new series that explores some of the most groundbreaking ideas in science, technology, conservation, medicine and beyond that could potentially change the world. And over the next few months, we'll be meeting the masterminds behind these projects. We start this series with a Californian molecular biologist and entrepreneur who had her brainwave while she was still a high school student. Miranda Wang was on a field trip when she realized how bad recycling systems were in the United States. After winning a science fair at school and attracting the attention of TED Talks, she found herself as the face of a movement trying to change the very nature of how we recycle. But how do you sell a new recycling concept? Well, Wang realized that she needed the plastic to make money in order to attract any attention, and so she founded BioCollection. BioCollection is a company that develops innovative technology to transform unrecyclable plastics into virgin quality chemicals that can be used in manufacturing everything from vehicles to biodegradable everyday consumer products. If that doesn't sound impressive enough already, then listen to this stat. If Wang manages to roll out her system worldwide, then she could turn a third of plastic waste into wealth. Even more impressive is that Wang is still only in her mid-20s. She's also one of Rolex's 2019 laureates, an award that supports people with ideas that advance human knowledge, protect cultural heritage, or help preserve natural habitats and species. Monocle's Andrew Miller meets Miranda Wang at Rolex's headquarters in Geneva, where she explains exactly how her system works and her plans to take it global.
I'll start by asking you to, as concisely as possible, explain the idea you're working on and I guess how it differs from what most people listen to this think of as just the recycling they might do anyway.
Today, globally, only 9% of plastics are actually getting recycled. So that means even if we're putting our plastics into recycling bins and we believe they're getting recycled, most of it is actually not getting recycled. 91% of it ends up in landfills or incinerators, where that's not really recycling. Incinerators turn the plastics into energy, but in the process releases all of that plastic material as carbon dioxide and pollutes and contributes to climate change. And also a huge percent, about 12% of plastics actually end up into our marine environments as pollution. Your plastic doesn't disappear from the bin. What happens after that, whether somebody comes in and takes that material and recycles it into a new material, is actually what recycling is about. And that part is broken today.
Does it strike you as weird that that fact is not more widely known? Because I think, like most people, I do my best to separate my rubbish and put the right things in the right bins and assume that by doing that I have been a good environmental citizen and I have not caused any further damage to anything.
Absolutely. The reason that we think plastic is a thing that kind of appears out of nowhere on our grocery store shelves and it disappears into nowhere once you put it into the bin is because we have been taught by the petrochemical industry, the plastics industry, to be very acclimated to a throwaway lifestyle. We now believe it is normal to get a material that we use for maybe 5 minutes and discard after that, after single use. You know, packaging material, a lot of it is single use, which means it loses 95% of its value after one single use. And these materials, because they're such sophisticated synthetic materials, which we used to when we first invented them, to only apply them very specialized applications like medical applications, we now pervasively use them and they don't break down on their own. Depending on what environments, it could be up to 1,000 years.
The idea you're working on, what does it do with that, I guess, other 91% of plastic that isn't being done right now?
We've invented a new recycling technology that can deal with a third of the plastics that are produced in the world. And what we're doing with this Rolex Award is we're working on scaling up this technology. So what we've developed is a new type of advanced recycling. Essentially, what we do is we recycle on a molecular level. So to understand and appreciate that, I'll first briefly explain how we recycle today and how that works. Today's recycling for that 9% is through a process called mechanical recycling, which means that when you get a water bottle, the water bottle gets shredded after it's cleaned, and then the plastics are melted and blended with some virgin plastics, meaning it's directly made from fossil fuels, and then you make a new water bottle again. But usually, because when you're mechanically recycling, you lose a lot of the performance attributes. And also, so far, we have not been able to achieve, across any kind of mechanical recycling, turning used plastics into food quality, food grade plastic. So you're downcycling. So essentially, this form of mechanical recycling doesn't work. And so what we need to do is actually look at this material on a more inherent level and say, what is it? Well, plastics are really long carbon chains of hundreds of thousands of carbon atoms synthetically forced together through current modern chemistry. And these materials are right now being built from hydrocarbons derived from fossil fuels. And this material is actually very advanced. So you need all of the chemical structure of it to be so pure and clean for you to get the properties. And so what we've created is a new way to recycle this material in a molecular way, which means that once we get this material, we actually have a chemical process which interacts with the plastics on a molecular level and cuts down the carbon chains from hundreds of thousands of carbon atoms down into only small chemical compounds with only 4 carbons to 18 carbons. So essentially what we do is we break the plastics down into their building blocks. And then we take these building blocks, purify them, and we turn them back into synthetic materials that can be used over and over again.
As it stands, though, what's the technology that does that? What's the actual machinery that drives that process?
So we've invented this chemical process. It's a series of different chemical reactions, essentially. And this process we've named Accelerated Thermal Oxidative Depolymerization, so ATOD for short. And essentially, this chemical process invention is the solution that my team proposes as one of the many solutions that we need for a circular economy.
We'll talk more about how it works and what effects it could have, but I do want to go back to the start of it, because the idea sounds potentially revolutionary, and it's always interesting, I think, to go back to the point at which a big idea like this starts. Was this something that kind of came to you as a flash that, hang on, this is a thing that nobody's thought of before that we could make work, or had you been working on other things that were a process that led you to this?
So I came across this problem of how little plastics were being recycled when I was still a high school student. And since then, since going to a waste plant, I took a field trip there actually with my high school environment club. And actually my co-founder, current business partner, was actually my high school best friend. And we went to this landfill, this waste plant together. And what we saw was not only just shocked by how much waste was created by a quarter of Vancouver, you know, a city, but also seeing how much of it was plastics, and also confronting with what we call the afterlife of these sad plastics, because what the state of the plastics we are familiar with are these perfect geometric shapes. You know, they're clean, they're really beautiful, actually, in some ways. But when these plastics get to the garbage plant, they're very dirty. They're putrid. They're covered in all types of contamination, and they're abandoned. Humans have now used them and thrown them away, and we have no use of them whatsoever. And so I think that level of engagement with the waste when I was very young, when I was 15, made me realize that this was something I needed to work on. So since then, my co-founder and I have actually developed multiple innovations for us, it was a system change, or a system problem, that the reason we have all this plastic that's not being recycled and going to the oceans, actually, because we don't have technologies that can take the plastics in the state that they're in after they're used and are dirty and turning them into materials that actually have virgin quality, right? Virgin grade quality. They have to be the same quality as the fossil fuel derived stuff so that people would actually spend money to buy them. Nobody is going to buy any materials that are just, you know, feel good and green, but actually is crap and won't work, right? So it had to be a technology, and it had to work on an industrial scale, and it had to be based on some sort of scientific discovery and innovation. And so we've been working on that. And what we notice is that plastics, when left on their own, after you throw them away, if you expose them to natural environmental conditions like sunlight, UV, microbial activity like bacteria and things, they do break down. Like I mentioned earlier, it takes a very long time, but they do break down. Plastics are actually, they very much tend to degrade through oxidation is the process, kind of a socio-human aging and things, but it happens in materials too. And so what we decided was, can we take this tendency for the material and actually accelerate that? Can we accelerate in a controlled environment and actually stop that process early enough so it doesn't just get all lost into carbon dioxide, but instead we can actually harvest them as some sort of intermediary building blocks? So then you leapfrog the need to have to go and extract these building blocks from oil and other kind of fossil fuel resources. Now you're directly taking the waste, leapfrogging to building blocks that are virgin quality and building up with them again into things that we need. So the key here is, because we're turning these plastics into making intermediates, we're building blocks out of them, we're actually leapfrogging, because compared to the current process of deriving these building blocks from petrochemical fossil fuel resources, we're directly making the building blocks and from there building materials that we all need.
To return you again to that field trip to the waste plant, though, it's quite common, I think, for people at high school. That's when people start taking an interest in the outside world. They start worrying about things like the environment. They start getting interested in various injustices and thinking, you know, maybe I should do something to correct that. It's that first flush of idealism. But it's very, very unusual for people that age not only to have the idea that might actually solve the problem, but find it within themselves to actually get the idea to happen. Have you ever thought about where, for you and your partners, that incredible self-belief came from? Was there no aspect of, yeah, but what do we know? We're high school students.
There was absolutely, we went through periods of we gave up and we both went to college. And so, I mean, when we first did this project, it was a science fair project. So we didn't expect anybody to take us seriously. We were really excited just the fact that the local university professor, Dr. Lindsay Eltis, even wanted us in his lab to try to find some soil bacteria and see if we can break the stuff down. When we didn't expect anyone to take us seriously. But I think a series of events that happened were very serendipitous and showed us it could become more. So for example, this science fair project ended up winning. And that was very strange for us because there were lots of great ideas. And at that time, the circular economy, the plastic issue was not even heard of. So by some chance, you know, we won. I guess they liked our presentation. And then the TED conferences, they were doing talent scouting, looking for speakers for their next conference. And this was in 2013 when TED was really just growing. And they came to our city the day that we made it to the cover of our city's newspaper. So we got on their radar. We got invited 3 days later to go and speak at the Salon event, which ended up taking us to the TED conferences. We gave the talk. We ended up getting 1 million views on the talk within like half a year. People started writing emails to us from around the world. I was a freshman, you know, first year college student. I had no idea like what I was even really going to do with my life. And so getting interest from around the world, people started sending me pictures showing places in the developing world where the plastics are not actually just in the waste plants. The plastics are everywhere, in their neighborhoods, you know, on their beaches, everywhere. And I started realizing the social injustice of this problem and how this is much bigger than the interests of a science project. But still, you know, I didn't really want to deal with this. This was like a very difficult, wicked problem that was not really mine. That's how I felt. And so I wanted to really run away from that because, you know, I was in university. I was in Ivy League. Everybody wanted to go into finance and make a lot of money. That was sort of the way everything worked. And there was a period of personal struggle where I really didn't think I could keep doing this. But I think the turning point came when I stumbled across a class in engineering entrepreneurship at my school where I thought it was very interesting initially going in. And then from reading some case studies that the professor provided, I started realizing that that was really my calling, that I knew that there was this problem in the world, you know, before people really even heard about the plastic problem. But I didn't really know what my role was with it. But from reading those case studies and hearing about all the, you know, these people who created new technologies, commercialized them, changed the world, and learning how that could be achieved made me realize that I could do that too. And when I went to my co-founder at the time, you know, we were just still friends from high school. We didn't have a formal partnership or anything. There was an opportunity where there was an accelerator program that would provide us with a research lab as well as some initial funding. I think it was about $50,000 in investment. And they came to us. It was just kind of a program where they were calling for applications. And I went to Jeannie, my co-founder, and I was just like, you know that problem we were working on? It wouldn't be great if we could continue working on that and actually be the people who actually made a valuable contribution to the problem beyond just giving a cool talk about it, you know? So it was this whole evolution.
Was it a sense of, I guess, feeling even irresponsible not to pursue this?
Yes, I felt first of all, it was a problem I really try to run away from. You got to understand that I'm not in love with any particular solution. I've kind of became obsessed and irritated with the problem of plastics, in that it's now becoming very personal, in that if I can't do anything about it, I would feel like a failure in my life. It's become my problem, if you know what I mean. And so I think it was just, you know, as a person who initially we just did a project and people started just coming to me and being like, hey, I saw an article about the plastic problem. I was like, good job. And it's like, you know, I was just like, well, you know, I didn't really do that much for it. I shouldn't be getting any credit. But then over time, you know, because we were just incrementally a little bit ahead of people on this area, people started coming to us. And I just felt a sense of, I guess you can say, responsibility. We're almost like indebted to actually do something about it.
So would it be right to say that it started to feel like a kind of calling, that this was just, for whatever reason, the thing that you have to do?
Yes, absolutely.
And what level is your organization at now? What are you actually able to do in terms of applying what you have developed to the problem?
I would say we're a pretty typical Silicon Valley startup. So we have 11 people on the team right now working full-time in this issue in a laboratory that we've set up in Menlo Park, California. It's similar to kind of a garage, but except we have actual, you know, research equipment and things. There are many companies developing innovations like that where we are, and we've chosen to locate there because we wanted to be in a place where people wouldn't make us feel weird about wanting to invent something and actually getting serious about making it. We don't really want to have to be just kind of treated differently. We want to be in a place where everybody else is innovating stuff too.
Which does seem a good point to raise the fact of the Rolex Awards and you being one of this year's laureates, because one of the things the Rolex Awards focus on is helping out people who are finding solutions to environmental challenges, and it's very hard to think that there's a more pressing one than this. What do you actually need from where you are now to scale up to the level at which you can start to make a real difference?
I think first it's important to talk about, like, why are we building this technology and what is the vision? Like, where is the end point? So I started realizing, like I mentioned, from a young age, that this plastic problem is a wicked problem. It can only be solved through market-driven solutions.
This is the idea, and it's quite a common one in conservation, that if you make it clear to people that not only is a conservationist agenda a good thing in and of itself, if done the right way, it will actually make money.
Correct. It must be financially sustainable, and it must be able to have create incentives for people to invest in it so you can actually accelerate and bring it to scale, which is something that I believed I had to make my case for, you know, with the Rolex jury, because they're very used to seeing conservation projects where a lot of the times it's not really about building a market-driven solution. But in our case, the goal is to actually create the technologies we very much lack right now. I mean, if you think about it, we have a linear economy. The reason a line, you know, a line is not a circle is because you don't have the other end that closes it. So you actually need to turn that line into a circle, and you don't do that by reducing simply, which is important. You achieve from a line to a circle by going around, and you must build those other elements to create entire infrastructure for it. And we have very little time. We have, you know, 31 years. By 2050, the scientific community believes we can have more plastic than fish in the oceans. We have less than 31 years to get this thing to scale. It's new technology, you know, that we've invented 2 years ago in our lab. We need to get this thing to scale and deal with the, right now it's 340 million metric tons of plastics that are being produced every year. And it's expected to double in the next 15 years because of global population. So we're creating this new technology. We're under immense pressure to scale up quickly. The technology like this, it needs a lot of proof points. And you simply cannot prove certain things about a new technology without building a system prototype and putting the trash through and running it and looking at how it performs. You cannot just sit up in your computer, in front of your computer, and model it out, right? So we have all of these needs to get resources at the time points where we're ready to make these steps. And Rolex was able to recognize that this is actually, you know, a little bit different from a lot of the nonprofits we support, but this is very important. And I'm really grateful they're able to recognize that viewpoint. So what we need, you know, from this point to actually get this technology to a scale where it can impact all of us and be a real solution is we've demonstrated the proof of concept on the technology. So we've been able to break down city trash, so plastics from actual city trash from San Jose City. We've broken it down into these chemical building blocks and we purify them in the lab. We've also been able to demonstrate taking the chemicals and using these building blocks to actually make materials. We made a variety of materials that could go into performance applications like building cars, building your shoes. And what we're doing now is we're breaking this technology up into basically two stages or two different parts. The first part is the process of depolymerization, which means breaking down the plastics. Mm-hmm. The second part is building up again with the building blocks into new materials that are virgin grade. And so the first part of the technology is a little bit more mature. So what we're doing with this funding and all of the other resources we've been attracting is actually in the beginning of next year, we will enter into engineering scale up for that first technology. So we're transforming a process developed by chemists in, you know, glassware, test tubes and such, and we're turning that process into an actual machine system that can be controlled by computers and will run plastics through and turn it into chemicals. The second part of the technology is turning the chemicals into materials. This part is still right now in development. We need to work also with the business team to understand what are the materials the world wants, because actually today, to launch a new material even into the market requires 1 to 3 years of certification and registrations. And also, we are very cautious about the materials we would launch, because these are materials that would be used for industrial and consumer product applications. We want to make sure that these materials are things we can actually get back eventually at the end of their life, and for us to recycle them again, because we want to make sure that we don't actually make more materials that perpetuate this issue of the linear economy.
Are you noticing already that the fact of being announced as a Rolex laureate is making a noticeable difference?
I believe so. And I think it's not just because it's, you know, Rolex, and obviously, you know, a lot of press, you know, actually take that seriously, but it's also this very good timing with the awareness people generally have on the issue. So getting in front of the right people at the right time right now has generated a lot of really good results for us. And actually, since the news has gotten out, we have been able to secure the funding to build this first system prototype that I was just describing.
You mentioned earlier that idea of this key date of 2050, 31 years hence. And I know it's a long way ahead to think about in terms of what is still a relatively new technology you're working on. But if everything that you're building and if everything you're working on ends up working as you hope it might, what difference do you imagine you could have made by 2050?
Right now, the goal is by 2023 to have this entire process proven out. So that's going from the dirty trash is not recyclable right now to the new materials that a company would contract and buy and we can take back and recycle. So it's really creating that whole end-to-end solution. By 2023, we should have that completely designed, figured out, and with the first unit entirely proven. That should also be at a break-even scale. So it's going to be on the order of tons per day. So from there, that's the point when we need to really think about who do we work with around the world to take this to places like Southeast Asia?
Mm.
How do we work in places where they don't have waste management infrastructure the way that America does? How do we work with local partners to actually make these technologies bring benefits to the people in these local areas as well, so that it's actually doing good, not just from recycling the trash, but also bring other benefits so that this can actually be something that works for everybody? So we need that type of input. And I'm inviting the world to join us in this creation process, because this is a new technology. And in the process of developing it, getting perspectives that are different, that widen our view, can actually help us develop this thing to become better. And so the goal is by 2025 to 2030, we'll be an international scale up. And eventually, we need to get this thing to right now, you know, about 100 million metric tons of polyethylene plastic, which is the type we target, is produced every year. So if you think about that, that's about, you know, on the order of millions of tons per day that we need to be able to deal with. So it's going to be a huge challenge. And we need people who actually are, you know how to turn these early stage technology and industries to do whatever is possible to join into this and help.
Where you are now, for you and your team, which, as you were saying earlier, is still quite small, and I guess especially for you personally, how do you, I guess, allocate your focus day by day? Because the potential endpoint of the technology you're describing, the possibilities are extraordinary, and the ramifications are possibly transformative of the entire planet at so many levels. Is that an easy thing for you to keep your head around, or do you just concentrate personally on just what needs to be done day by day?
It's both, right? And I think I'm in the unique role in my organization where I come to events around the world and I participate in higher level dialogue, and I understand perspectives of different stakeholders, the industry, the nonprofits, and trying to reconcile the differences, figuring out what would be a solution that makes sense. And after socializing these ideas, then taking them back into my team and translating it into tangible things that we work on every day. And we have a really fantastic team where everybody not only manages what is the appropriate kind of level of responsibility at their own position, but they also have the ability to look into the bigger picture and the details. So this is something we have been really articulating clearly to the team. You're not just here as a scientist to develop this particular feature. You must be able to think about the system change and how this potential, you know, new material we're making, if we unleash it onto the world, is it going to be something that will actually make the world better? Because at the end of the day, we're trying to close loops. We're trying to solve problems. You know, the very purpose of this organization is we are a social for-profit, but the very purpose of it is for every dollar that this machine makes, we're removing a certain amount of trash that previously would have been pollution. That is the business. The business is not about taking natural resources and creating things that people want to buy. The business is creating things people want to buy from trash, right? So this is a challenge because we don't even really have control over the kind of trash we have to work with.
As you've explained, this is ideally at least a for-profit enterprise. That being the case, is there any role that governments, whether they're in California or the United States federal government or anywhere else, can or should play in what you're doing? Presumably, if they were minded to help, they could help.
Yeah, I think there's a role for actually every level of government and intergovernmental agencies to play. And to illustrate, local governments need to embrace new recycling technologies. They need to actually work with the local, you know, this is in developed countries. In developing countries, they actually need to invest in and take in new infrastructure. They may need to reach out to other entities to be able to get the financing for it, but this is crucial. We have to create recycling and waste management infrastructure in everywhere around the world because materials go everywhere in the world, so we have to find ways to get them back. But in higher levels of governments, these bans and the reduction initiatives that are happening are very important. Frankly, you know, we don't need packaging to go into things like straws or plastic forks when you're at a restaurant already. You know, that is ridiculous. And we need to reduce our consumption. But beyond that, these higher levels of government can also do other things that will make the economics look different. Right now, the reason that we are not investing in recycling, or we haven't been for the last decades, is because it's always been cheaper to make virgin quality plastic. Because the petrochemical industry has been, you know, at scale. They've been working at this for a long time. They're very good at it. They've been at scale for a long time. So something like polyethylene plastic, like plastic bags, they cost 70 cents a pound. You can't beat that. That's really cheap. If you have to recycle a piece of plastic, it takes, you know, 20 to 30 steps just to clean it. So recycling is actually really expensive. So how are you going to make someone recycle something and it's going to cost more, and you're going to have worse properties? Nobody's going to buy that. So the government at higher levels can create policies, economic policies, that can tax virgin materials and actually use those dollars to fund new innovations that will level the playing field and eventually solve the problem. The world we're in right now is we're going to have to suffer through this like temporary period, hopefully temporary period. We all know this stuff is polluting the world. The tap is still on. We can't fully turn it off because we don't even have alternatives. That's another thing that needs to be developed. But eventually, we're going to have to turn off the tap. We're going to have to push the materials into alternative cycles. And so the governments at all levels have to facilitate that transition. And we need to firmly invest in the circular economy. This is not something that you do as a fashion trend and you stop doing in a year. This is something that is actually an essential infrastructure, just like roads and highways. You know, we need these things for the world to function.
That was Miranda Wang, molecular biologist and founder of BioCollection, speaking to Monocle's Andrew Muller. Wang is also one of Rolex's 2019 laureates. Over the coming weeks on The Pioneers, we'll be meeting more of the innovators whose bright ideas are changing the world we live in, starting with the French engineer Grégoire Coutine, who has designed new technology that one day could help patients with spinal paralysis to regain use of their legs. No big deal. But until then, thanks for tuning in.